Heal Thyself, Using a Holistic Approach with Dr. Eric Madrid.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to today's podcast. In this episode, you are going to be listening to a lecture that I gave at Rancho Springs Hospital in Murrieta, California. I was speaking to a group of patients with type 2 diabetes, and we were discussing the health benefits of intermittent fasting and the ketogenic diet. I know the episode is a little long, so it may take you a couple of days to listen to it. However, there is some very good information that I think you will find useful. It's not only for those with diabetes, but also for anyone who is simply wanting to lose weight, reduce their blood pressure, perhaps get off medications when it comes to high cholesterol, and also for those with diabetes. So I hope you enjoy this episode. Also, please make sure you leave a positive review for me on the Apple iTunes store. And also don't forget to follow me on Instagram and Twitter or Facebook by searching Eric Madrid MD. Thank you and enjoy this episode. Welcome everybody. I'm Eric Madrid. I'm a family doctor with Rancho Family Medical Group. Okay, so while I'm going through this, I have a book that I brought. I'm going to pass it around because sometimes people aren't really sure what a keto diet includes, what is the food that you're going to be able to eat. Some people have a vision in their mind that everything's going to taste like cardboard, right, that this is going to be horrible and, you know, this isn't fun and so on. So I'm going to pass the book around. You guys can just kind of skim through it. And these are just keto recipes, keto meals that, you know, and there's many books out there, there's websites out there, and I'll discuss that as well. But this will just kind of give you an idea of the kind of meals that can be included on a keto diet. So today we're going to be talking about two different things. We're going to be talking about intermittent fasting. Okay, it's not as scary as it sounds. Everybody here fasts every day, believe it or not. And a ketogenic diet. So it's actually a two-part plan to help improve health, lose weight, reverse and even control diabetes. How many of you guys have been told you can reverse diabetes? Okay, well, that's pretty good, but that was probably more recently you've been told that, right? 10 years ago, 15 years ago, if I would have stood up here and said diabetes can be reversed, okay, I would have been shunned by my colleagues. I would have been considered a quack. That would have been ridiculous. I'm selling snake oil and all that stuff. That's what have, you know, and that's what those doctors who claimed that 20 years ago actually had to endure. Dr. Julian Whitaker out of Orange County was one of them, and a few other ones. And now it's kind of like, duh. You know, I have medical students who rotate with me, and the thought of reversing diabetes or getting off of medications is almost like common sense to them now. So first we have to discuss some dietary myths that we've all kind of been ingrained, or a lot of dietary myths that have been ingrained in our minds over the years. Number one, we must eat three meals a day. When you think about it, that's a modern day luxury. None of our ancestors, and I mean, you know, going back hundreds of years, had, most of our ancestors did not have the luxury of eating three meals a day. For the most part, they might eat one, they might eat two. If they ate three, it was because they were well-to-do and they had people who were serving it to them. But generally, there was a lot of effort our ancestors had to put into even having one or two meals per day. Nonetheless, three meals per day, right? We can literally do little to no work. We have a refrigerator that's in a pantry that's full of food, and we could literally do zero work, burn very little calories, and we have enough food to last us for a month. So there's very little effort that's required to eat. So we really don't need to have three meals a day. We'll go into that. Breakfast is the most important meal of the day. Again, we've all been told that. We've also been told one should eat every 2 to 3 hours to lose weight and speed up the metabolism. That's something that I frequently have told patients over the years, but I think now we're starting to think otherwise. Skipping meals is bad. A low-fat diet, it makes sense. If you want to lose fat, eat a low-fat diet, right? I mean, it sounds very common sense. And we started this low-fat dietary craze around the early 1990s, and now we're kind of shifting out of that. But when you look, since the 1990s to now, have we gotten fatter? Or have we gotten skinnier? Right? We haven't gotten skinnier. We've eaten more low-fat food than we ever have in the history, and yet we're fatter. So either there's something else going on here, or maybe the fat and low fat is not the answer. Eat all the food on your plate. There are starving children around the world, right? And if your parents, you know, or grandparents or whoever, or, you know, grew up in the Depression era, that was, you know, what was told. But think about it. When we are full, let's think about it. When a kid is full, what do they do? They stop eating, right? When a baby is full, the baby stops eating. As parents, we don't, you know, force the milk down a newborn's throat. They listen to their body, we respect that, and when they're hungry, they eat. So growing up, our grandparents would say, hey, you know, we would stop and we'd say, I don't want any more food. Finish all that food on your plate. There's starving people around the world. I'm not hungry. If you don't stuff your face, even though you're, you know, they don't actually say this, but this is what they're implying. If you don't stuff your face and stuff your belly, even though your body's telling you not to eat, we're not going to reward you with dessert.
That's right.
So we learn to overeat and to be rewarded for overeating, right? We're given sugar, we're given sweets as a reward to overeat. So we learn then overall to eat all our food, not to listen to our body, and we're going to even be rewarded with something sweet when we don't listen to our body. Exercise more and eat less. Now, this is probably all the advice most of us doctors give because we don't really understand nutrition, right? We're experts in health care, or experts in disease care, but not real good in health care. Okay, not real good in preventing stuff, right? And so a doctor will say, well, just exercise more and eat better and you'll lose weight. It doesn't seem like it's actually that simple, okay? And the studies have actually proven that it's not that simple. You know, we think a calorie is a calorie. Okay, if you reduce your 3,500 calories equals a pound. So if you just eat 500 calories less a day times 7 days a week, that's 3,500 calories. You'll lose a pound a week. And at the end of the year, you'll be down 52 pounds. Again, mathematically, it makes sense, but in reality, it doesn't pan out. Our body adapts. So if you're normally eating 2,000 calories a day and you go down to 1,500 calories a day, you'll lose weight initially, right? And then you get real excited, and about a month or two go on, you're down a few pounds, you know, 6-7 pounds. And then what happens? You stop. Why? Because your body adapts. So your body's metabolism, instead of burning 2,000 calories a day, when you're eating 2,000 calories a day, you're burning 2,000 calories a day. You cut back to 1,500 calories a day, you lost weight, your body adapted and says, hey, he or she's not eating that much anymore. We better slow down and only burn 1,500 calories a day. So now you're back to square one. Okay. So sugar consumption. So if we go back a couple hundred years here, and you know, 1822, the average American, okay, grams of sugar per day. We consumed, so we consumed about 7 grams of sugar per day. That's about a teaspoon, or maybe 2 teaspoons worth. Okay, now up here, you know, this is 2002, but we're probably up to about 140 teaspoons of sugar per day combined. 140 grams per day per person. All right, and I have not overlapped it, but I'm sure if you were to overlap diabetes, obesity incidence, chronic disease, cancers, it would probably very closely resemble this graph. So in reality, going, you know, people have asked me, this is this low sugar diet, this low carb thing, it's just a fad. You know, is it like everything else? It's just a fad. It's going to burn out after a few months, a few years, and we're all back to square one. Well, I would suggest that the fad is actually a sugar fad. So this is the fad that needs to come to an end. But this is almost like a 50-year fad of eating excessive sugar. Right. And right around here, let me see, where's the 70s? Right around here in the 70s, this is when high fructose corn syrup became introduced into our food supply. Right. Prior to that, we didn't have high fructose corn syrup, but we needed a cheap way of sweetening our foods that aren't normally sweetened. So bread now has sugar in it, ketchup has sugar in it, but it's high fructose corn syrup. And our body doesn't really process that the same way as it will process regular sugar. So this has also contributed to a lot of our obesity and fatty liver epidemic. This is kind of a common thing now. Hazardous waste, right? The new hazardous waste. And by that meaning that when we have the extra men and women, we have extra abdominal fat in our abdomen, it increases risk for heart attacks, for strokes, for cancers, and all this. So
the beer belly,
right, exactly. So part one is fasting. Has anyone here ever fasted before, maybe like 24 hours?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, 48 hours?
Yeah.
72 hours a week, a month, 40 days, right? And overnight, all of us, right?
Yeah.
Matter of fact, we break the fast every morning and we eat breakfast, break fast. We break right. fast in the morning for breakfast. So, but fasting is not anything new, right? It's not anything new. So Hippocrates said everyone has a physician inside of him or her. We just have to help it in its work. The natural healing force within each of us is the greatest force in getting well. Our food should be our medicine. Our medicine should be our food. But to eat when you are sick is to feed your sickness. And our body will naturally fast, right, when we're sick, right? When you have a flu or upper respiratory infections, perhaps, pneumonia, gastroenteritis, the last thing you are craving is like, hey, let's go out to dinner. Yeah. I have the flu, I have gastroenteritis, but I'm hungry. We're not hungry. Our body knows to fast when it's ill in order to heal itself. Plutarch, instead of using medicine, rather fast a day. So, again, we all fast quite regularly, don't realize it. You know, breakfast, again, is when we broke it. During times of illness, even animals, right? When, you know, we've had animals that were towards the end of their life, they were sick perhaps, they go in a quiet place and they fast. They don't eat. And that's fine. We don't force them to eat, but that's just part of their body. And hopefully they recover. And if they don't, you know, they don't. But it's part of the process during illness is that we all fast. Some people do it for health purposes, for weight loss, for spiritual or religious reasons. Fasting in antiquity, so Hippocrates and Plato both discussed fasting in ancient Greek writings. Paracelsus, a Swiss physician, alchemist, and astrologer, stated, fasting is the greatest remedy, the physician within. Famous people, I guess you can say, who fasted, Jesus, Buddha, Muhammad, Gandhi, and many more. Fasting may actually help increase lifespan, according to studies. And this occurs, according to scientists, due to activation of two genes called sirtuin-1 and sirtuin-2 genes. And these are the genes that help to slow down the replication of our cells and our DNA. And on the end of our DNA is something called a telomere. It's kind of, if you think of our DNA, we've all seen pictures of DNA like in an X-shaped, right, image. Is the DNA, and on the tips of the DNA, there's caps. And that's what determines our lifespan. You can actually do tests, right? They do these tests where they look at your DNA, they look at the tips of the DNA, and they can kind of estimate your biological age, like the age of your cells and so on. And then some people, you know, if you're a smoker, you might be, the DNA may look 10 years older than you. If you take super good care of yourself, then the DNA may appear, you know, 10 years younger than your actual biological age or chronological age. But fasting can help activate these genes. These genes make proteins, again, that slow down the aging process. And it looks like fasting really, it kind of comes down to calorie restriction. And they realized, scientists realized, you know, 20 years ago that in using animal models, they would use fruit flies a lot of times. And when they fed them less, I mean, because a fruit fly only has, I think it's like a 27 or 25 day lifespan. But when they fed those fruit flies less, they actually lived 10 to 20% longer. When they overfed them, they actually died, you know, they'd have a 21 day lifespan. And when they underfed them or restricted their calories, then they would live, you know, 32, 33 days. So this is kind of how that research came about. Benefits of fasting, again, weight loss, anti-tumor benefits. And these are all based on studies, and I will show the studies at the end of the slides. Cancer cells may be more susceptible to chemotherapy. So one of the things now that's coming out and some studies out of USC it's kind of counterintuitive because when people have cancer and they're undergoing chemo, we're usually saying, hey, let's get that weight on. Eat as much as you can. We want to kind of, you know, fatten you up a little bit because you might lose weight from the chemotherapy or from the treatment. But what they've shown is when one is fasting or when they actually, even like a 24-hour fast before chemotherapy, that it makes the cancer cells more susceptible to the chemotherapy medication while protecting the non-cancerous cells. So the non-cancer cells become more resistant and less likely to be damaged while the cancer cells are more susceptible. I think this is still kind of in the early stages of testing them. Strengthens the immune system when one fasts, increases longevity, and appears to also help with autoimmune conditions. reduced insulin production. And this is a big reason where fasting and intermittent fasting, which we'll get into, can help actually reverse and improve diabetes. Increases insulin sensitivity, so that means that the insulin your body makes is more efficient. So if the insulin your body makes is more efficient, your body therefore does not have to make as much insulin. Or if you're on insulin, you don't need as much insulin because it's more efficient. Fasting may also eliminate the need for blood pressure, medications, diabetes, cholesterol medications, especially when weight is lost. Again, can help reverse diabetes. Now, when I say reverse diabetes, that term can be somewhat controversial because the doctor may still have, I've had patients we've gotten off of medications. So the conversation I have with my patient is like, hey, you have reversed your diabetes. You're no longer on medications and your blood tests are in the normal range. Now, I'll probably keep it in the problem list saying diabetes diet controlled. Okay, and there's an important distinction there because I don't want that patient to say, great, I'm going to celebrate, I reversed my diabetes, and doc, I'll see you in 5 years and back to living life as normal or you know, usual, and now all of a sudden they've regained their diabetes again within 6 months and they avoid to see me because, you know, they thought they reversed it and they thought it was a permanent reversal. So obviously they reversed it because of the changes. So again, you know, from a doctor-patient perspective, it's reversed. From my perspective, I would say, hey, let's just see you once a year then. Let's just make sure you're staying on task and make sure your blood tests are good so, you know, that you don't need to go on any other medications. Also, when we fast, we can increase adrenaline levels and ketone levels, and we'll get into that, after about 24 hours, which also increases energy. So I'll give you a study. This is actually a patient of mine, different name. Henry is a 70-year-old patient of mine, diabetic, high blood pressure, high cholesterol. He was 280 pounds. His hemoglobin A1C was 11%. He was on 85 units of insulin a day. So he was actually taking 40 units of Levemir, which is a long-lasting insulin, once a day, and 15 units of a rapid-acting insulin. So a total insulin of 85 units a day. He started on intermittent fasting and a keto diet. Within 2 weeks, he was off his insulin. Okay, and down 15 pounds. So within 5 months, he was still off of his insulin. I saw him in January. Within 5 months, he was still off his insulin, down 45 pounds. He was still taking some pills. So in his case, he didn't reverse it completely yet. But he was still taking pills, not really exercising. I mean, he would go for walks, but he didn't really change his exercise routine. And again, in January, down 235, feels great, enjoying his life. You know, him and his wife, feels 20 years younger and has more energy than ever. So again, we're talking about the fasting. So there's different kinds of fasting. So we call it intermittent fasting is kind of the more common one. And sometimes we'll call it a 12-12, 16-8, 18-6, 20-4, 23-1. We have this in the handout. The first 12 refers to the number of hours fasting. The second number refers to the period of time in which you'll consume meals. So here you're fasting for 12 hours, 8 in which you are sleeping. So that means you only have to be awake for 4 hours and not eat. So that's not too hard sometimes. And then you eat your meals within a 12-hour window. So perhaps maybe eating between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. And this kind of fasting is really good for those who struggle with evening snacks because you have to retrain your body. Right? A lot of us might, you know, you do great all day. And you're getting ready to go to bed at 9 o'clock, and it's like, oh man, that bowl of ice cream is just calling you to the freezer, or that bowl of cereal, and it's almost like we're possessed. Like, I have to eat this. I can't say no. And in our mind, we're rationalizing. I know I shouldn't eat this. I've done so good all day. But you know what? I'll do better tomorrow. I'll just have this bowl of ice cream tonight. And we've all been there. But anyway, so we'll go into the intermittent fasting in a little bit more detail. We have regular fasting, which would be really just like maybe a water fast, only one day, 7 days, 10 days. Partial fasting might be simply eliminating certain things from your diet, such as gluten or dairy. Alternate day fasting, some people will eat normal, like on a Monday, cut their calories down to 500 calories on a Tuesday, back to normal on Wednesday, Thursday, 500 calories. Juice and, you know, religious fasting. So, but we're going to mostly talk about the intermittent fasting. Just quickly, I'm going to just kind of go through these slides. In Hinduism, it's a common practice. In Buddhism, you know, they also practice fasting. In Judaism, that's the most well-known day of fasting in Judaism is a Day of Atonement or Yom Kippur. when fasting is believed to purify the soul while praying for forgiveness of past sins. Also, the other days in fasting is the ninth of Av, a day of mourning for past tragedies. And it's a sunrise to sunset, so it's a really just a probably more like a 12-hour fast. Fasting in Christianity as well, during season of Lent, sometimes just certain foods are given up. I'm assuming Jesus fasted 40 days, so we assume this is a literal 40 days here. And 40 nights, he was hungry. Obviously, it would have been a water fast because we do need to have some kind of fluid intake, but people can actually fast for 40 days, 50 days. I've read reports of people fasting 6 months and it's losing hundreds of pounds. I'm not recommending that, but that obviously has to be under a very strict medical supervision and stuff. But again, most of us have enough fat. If you think of fat as like a savings account, it's an energy savings account, right? It's an energy savings account. And I've heard most of us have enough fat on us. It's like a gas tank, right? That we could literally walk to New York and back without eating, and we would have enough fat in our body to get us there and back. Right? That's how much fat most of us have. So fat is energy. It's a savings account. Within Islam, Ramadan is a holy month where Muslims will fast from sunrise to sunset as well. So again, we're going to go back into the intermittent fasting. There are various types of intermittent fasting and time periods. When I recommend this to patients, I try to make it as least painful as possible. So I start off with a 12-12. And again, this really helps reset our clocks and helps one break a habit of snacking before bedtime. For those who don't have that problem, that's great. You're already kind of a step ahead of most of us. And then maybe a 16-8 would be an appropriate. So a 16-8 means you're fasting for 16 hours and you're eating in a 8-hour window. So your first meal might be 10 o'clock in the morning, a brunch perhaps, and then dinner at 5:30, you're done by 6 o'clock. And you're basically eating maybe two meals within that period, or maybe you're having a snack at 10 o'clock, lunch at 1, dinner at 5, or something to that extent. But you're fasting during those other 16 hours. But during the fast, you can have water, black coffee, or unsweetened tea. Okay, basically, we can consume stuff that does not affect, that's not metabolically, does not affect our metabolism. And I did this. So last September, or last June, all right, I'll tell you how I got into this. So I've had patients talking to me about this over the years. I had one patient talk to me about it 5 years ago, tell me about all the weight that he lost. And I'm like, okay, whatever. This is crazy. I've never heard of it, but do what you're going to do. And I didn't listen. And meanwhile, I kept hearing about this. And I had a couple patients tell me about this book called The Obesity Code by Dr. Jason Fung. And so I decided to buy the book. I read it about a year ago, and still I read it. I'm like, okay, this makes sense. This is good. But personally, I wasn't ready to do that because at that time, my weight was considerably more than it was now. I was at 247 pounds. Now I'm 6'3", so I could, at least I thought I could hide it pretty good, but not so good. But anyway, I thought I hit it good. But anyway, I'm 6'3", 247 pounds. But for me, what the problem was is I started snoring more. Now, when I was at 220, 230, I was fine, no snoring. But all of a sudden, when I got up to 247, I was snoring more. I was waking up with headaches. I wasn't feeling good. My energy level was down. And my wife says, hey, maybe you should go get a sleep study, right? But like all husbands who listen to our wives, not. I said, absolutely not. I'm a doctor. How dare you tell me what to do? You're a paralegal. I'm a doctor. So, of course, I didn't listen to my wife. But because I knew that I just needed to lose weight. I knew what the problem was. I didn't want to have a machine. I just knew I needed to lose weight. So in June, I said, okay, that's it. I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to start exercising. And I'm going to really, and I ate pretty good actually, but I didn't really eat that many carbs, but I just needed to fine tune some stuff. So I said, I'm going to start exercise. I'm going to go running. And I used to run cross country in high school. So running always came really easy for me. And usually when I would start running again within a week or two, I'd be up to 3 miles without any problem. But I never really ran at 247. So I put on my shoes, my shorts. I go up for a run. I get about 6-7 houses up the street and my left knee starts to hurt. And I never hurt my knee before. And at this point, I realized I was too fat to exercise. I was too fat to exercise, right? This isn't good. So at that point, I made a commitment to myself. I said, I'm going to spend 90 days focusing on my diet. I'm not going to exercise because I don't want to injure myself. I'm going to focus 90 days on diet. I'm going to do this intermittent fasting thing. I'm going to go on a low-carb diet, and let's see what happens. And 90 days later, I was 30 pounds less. I was down to 217 pounds. And let me back up, too. So another thing, so my grandfather, who's still alive and doing well, he's 89. He was also probably about 50, 60 pounds overweight. His my step-grandmother, his wife, has Alzheimer's disease, and I think the care, you know, he's been caring for her, and that's really stressed him out. They're not going out to eat as often. He's not preparing as much food, and she keeps him on his toes. So over the past year, he also had lost about 60 pounds, right? And my dad had lost also about 30 pounds. But at one point, I remember, you know, a little over a year ago, seeing my grandfather overweight, my dad overweight, I'm biologically very similar to them. I started telling myself a story that, well, gosh, it runs in the family. Yeah. Maybe that's why I'm overweight. You know, I eat pretty good. I don't eat that much bread. I really don't eat sweets. I don't eat sugar. I mean, I'm pretty strict on my diet. But intellectually, I knew that it wasn't genetic. But then when I saw my grandfather and my dad, I just started thinking, well, maybe it is genetic. Maybe, you know, maybe there is nothing I can do about it. And so a couple weeks before I, you know, started again to do this diet, I saw my grandfather, he was down 60 pounds. I saw my dad, he was down 30 pounds. And I no longer have that as an excuse, right? And now, of the three of us, I'm the youngest, I'm the doctor, and I'm the most overweight. I'm like, this isn't good. So again, and I share that because we have to be careful what we tell ourselves about ourselves, because we all tell ourselves stories. Right, I'm this. I'm, you know, I'm too dumb. I'm too smart. Maybe, you know, or I'm too ugly. I'm too this. I'm too fat. I'm a fat person trying to lose weight. You know, or you know, but when we identify ourselves as a certain way, that kind of starts to limit ourselves. So we might say, oh, I'm a failure. I've tried all these things in the past, and I've failed at every single thing. Right. So we start to tell ourselves these stories, and they kind of become self-fulfilling prophecies. So I would suggest, you know, anyone who might label themselves as fat, overweight, obese, instead say, hey, you're a skinny person who's gained weight. You're not a fat person who's trying to get skinny. You're a skinny person who's gained weight, and you're trying to get back to that skinny self. Okay? Because now you've identified yourself and labeled yourself something more of what you want to become. But anyway, so these are the intermittent fastings, 18-6, 24, and 23-1. OMAD stands for 1 meal a day. The OMAD is a very difficult one. It's one that I'll do now once in a while, but it took me almost 6 months to work up to that. Where literally I'll go all day long, won't eat breakfast, won't eat lunch, I'll drink coffee, water, and then simply have dinner and do it again the next day. So that's tough. But it can be done, but you have to work your way up to it, and I would not recommend a person start at that. So again, most people will start at the 12-12, fast for 12 hours, eat 2 to 3 meals during a 12-hour window, then perhaps progress to a 16-8, fast for 16 hours, eat 2 meals during an 8-hour window, and during the fasting, water, black coffee, tea allowed, no snacks permitted. The first 90 days when I did this, I would actually do the 12-12 about 5 days a week, and 2 days a week I would do the 16-8. And I would just kind of randomly, like maybe on a Tuesday and a Thursday, I would just skip breakfast and try to go as long as I could. Eventually, I got up to 10 o'clock, and then I would have maybe some almonds or a protein bar, and then I would have my lunch. And that kind of just kept my body guessing. My body couldn't really predict when the next meal was coming, so that helped prevent my body from adapting. And then eventually, there's 18-6. Now that's, so after about 5 months, I pretty much progressed to the 18-6. So that's kind of what I do now most of the time. Is I won't eat breakfast, I won't have anything until noon, and then I'll make sure my dinner's done by 6 o'clock. There's a 20-4 or a 23.1, which is the 1 meal a day. And again, this is kind of a typical schedule that I would now do. Now, you might not want to start off at this. You might just want to start at a 12-12 for several months, kind of like I lay out there on the handout, or for several weeks, or a 16-8. But now I kind of rotate it a lot more, again, because my body now will not adapt, and my body is not sending me hunger signals every morning because I don't eat every morning, right? So when you eat every morning at 8 o'clock or 7 o'clock, your body starts to automatically secrete the digestive hormones at 8 o'clock, whether you're going to eat that day or not. But if you've been eating every day for the last 60 years at 8 o'clock, come 8 o'clock, your stomach starts to growl, and we interpret that as, oh, I'm hungry. Well, now we're not really hungry, you know, because we have the savings account here, right, of energy. But our body will interpret this. That's not really a true hunger. That's just kind of like a fake hunger. Your body's expecting to eat and stuff. So you can actually work through that and not eat in many cases. Okay, so that's the intermittent fasting part. The second part is, what food can we eat? So earlier we talked about sugar being the problem, the sugar consumption and so on. And most of you might be saying, hey, I don't eat any sugar. This is great. I don't add sugar to my coffee. I don't add sugar to my food, right? But we eat carbohydrates, right? Carbohydrates break down into sugar. Carbohydrates break down into sugar. Very important to realize. Okay, if each of us in this room were a sugar molecule, this room is full of sugar, correct? If we all held hands, this room would be sugar-free. Okay? And then a carbohydrate is a sugar molecule. It's a sugar molecule holding hands. So if we're all holding hands, this room is sugar-free, and we're just one big carbohydrate. Once we stop holding hands, we're sugar. So you can eat a piece of bread, which is sugar-free. That's great. It's sugar-free. It should be fine for your diabetes. It's sugar-free until you eat it. Right? It's sugar-free until you eat it, because carbohydrates break down into sugar. Okay, so again, it's very disingenuous the way they do these things, and it's kind of confusing. A lot of people don't realize that. So again, sugar molecules by themselves are sugar, but when they hold hands with other sugar molecules, that's a carbohydrate, and that's what pasta is, and that's what rice is, and that's what grains are, and everything. So you may be confused and say, I don't need any sugar. Why is my sugar high? All I had for breakfast was some toast, and I had a sandwich for lunch, and I had some spaghetti for dinner, and it was sugar-free sauce. I had zero sugar, but my blood sugar went up. It doesn't make any sense, because carbohydrates break down into sugar. So the question would be, what should we eat? So intermittent fasting can stand alone by itself, okay? You don't have to do anything else. You could just sit there and say, I'm going to do intermittent fasting. I don't want to do any of this keto stuff or vegetarian or paleo. I don't want to do any specific diet. I just want to eat my regular food, and I just want to eat, during certain time periods. And that would probably help to a degree and probably get some weight down. Most people eat, right, the standard American diet. It's a great acronym. SAD. All of us eat a SAD diet. But anyway, so what do we eat? So I'm going to kind of propose maybe more of a ketogenic diet, and we'll go into what that means. But a keto diet is a high-fat diet. That sounds kind of weird. Sounds like I'm, leading you down the wrong path, but don't worry. A ketogenic is a high-fat, moderate-protein, low-carb diet. It's what's called a paleo. Some people will call that a caveman diet. That's kind of also a low-carb diet. Medium fat, it's wheat and grain free and dairy free. A keto diet also is wheat and grain free, but you can actually have dairy. There's vegetarian. Is anyone here vegetarian? Any chance? No? Okay.
Sometimes,
okay. Yeah, you could do a keto diet if you're a vegetarian. You just have to just not have grains. You just have to eat all plants, which is fine. Let me give you another case study here of a patient. Pete, 49-year-old, he came to see me complaining of increased thirst, urination, dry mouth, suspected diabetes. His blood sugar was 315 in the office. He was never diagnosed with diabetes before. This is how he presented. Blood sugar was 315 in the office. I sent him to get a lab. His hemoglobin A1C was 12.3. All right, and most of you are familiar with that number. The hemoglobin A1C is a three-month average of blood sugar. The goal is, for a diabetic, the goal is around 7.5% or less. Non-diabetics are under 5.2%. So this tells me his hemoglobin A1C was 12.3. What this means, it's hemoglobin is our red blood cells. So if we take your red blood cells, what percentage of them have sugar attached to them? That's what a hemoglobin A1C is. It's a percentage of red blood cells or hemoglobin that have sugar attached. His was 12.3, indicating to me that his average blood sugar was about 310. A normal average blood sugar would be less than 100. So we started him on metformin. I had to talk to him, and I said, you have two choices here. The traditional approach is just keep doing what you're doing, business as usual. We're going to start you on a medicine. It will help. We'll probably have to add a second medicine. It will help, but eventually won't help enough. Keep doing what you're doing. Maybe a couple years from now, we might have to start you on some injectables, maybe insulin. And eventually the diabetes can be harmful to your circulation, increases risk for heart attack, strokes, kidneys, amputation. So that's road number one. Road number two, let me talk to you about this intermittent fasting and this ketogenic thing that I've been learning about. And I gave him a handout similar to the one that I gave you. And he says, yes, that's what I want to do. I want to make some changes. I'm feeling horrible. I have no energy and so on. So we started him on metformin. 2 months later, he came back because I wanted to see how he was doing. He was doing the intermittent fasting and the ketogenic diet. He lost 15 pounds. His hemoglobin A1C was 6.3. which is actually now in the really the pre-diabetic range, but he's on medicines. But he was only on metformin. Honestly, this drug would probably only bring that down maybe 2 points at the most. So if he did not make any changes, I probably would have got his hemoglobin A1C down to 10.3. But because he made the dietary changes and lifestyle changes, he was down to 6.3. And 3 months later, I saw him in January. So this was all back in July. I saw him in January, he's down to 5.3. Right, and he was down another, he was down like total 45 pounds now. He'd been on a CPAP machine for over 10 years. He was off of it. And he had more energy than he did using the CPAP machine. And he said he felt just 20 years younger. He was sleeping better. He was bouncing out of bed. His joints weren't hurting. And I told him he could stop his metformin. He wanted to continue it. And I was like, okay, well, it's not going to really hurt you, but let's just go down to once a day, then, and we'll reevaluate in a few more months. And he's like, okay, but he was doing amazing. So this guy literally reversed his diabetes. So ketogenic diet. The main premise of it is that a person's total calories consist of 60 to 70% fat, right? And we'll discuss what that means. 25 to 35% protein and 5% of your calories come from carbohydrates. It's primarily a diet high in fats, moderate in protein, low in carbohydrates. When on the ketogenic diet, we recommend, again, carbs turn into sugar. We recommend less than 50 grams per day total of carbohydrates or 20 to 30 net carbs. And I'll explain the difference between those. And on the bottom of the handout as well, I kind of list this also. So in case you need that as a reference. Food labels. Do you guys normally look at food labels? Kind of, maybe?
Trying to.
Yeah. So carbohydrates, when you look at a food label here, total carbohydrates are 9. Dietary fiber is 2. Dietary fiber we don't absorb, okay, into our body. So those are the carbohydrates, for example, in kale and spinach and broccoli, right? It's all carbohydrates, but it's a complex carbohydrate, but that's not going to raise your blood sugar because those carbohydrates are not going to be absorbed into your blood, but it helps to clean out the gut, and it has a lot of other nutrients. So it's total carbohydrates. Total carbohydrates are 9. The dietary carbohydrates are 2. So you would subtract that. So now we're down to 7 net carbs. 2 grams of sugar, that gets absorbed. And then we have something called sugar alcohols that are in some foods. Sugar alcohols will include things like mannitol, sorbitol, xylitol, any of those things that end in an OL. That's a sugar alcohol, right? In chemistry, OL is the word alcohol, the OL is kind of the hint. So alcohol, OL. Right, we have isopropyl alcohol, which is the rubbing alcohol. You have mannitol, OL. So these are sugar alcohols that don't get absorbed. So they're sweet, right? So we can taste them, like sorbitol, if you've had that, or xylitol is a sweetener. You can taste it. It's sweet, so it helps with that sweet tooth, but it doesn't get absorbed into your sugar, so has little or negligible effect. And there's some controversy of whether or not it affects blood sugar and insulin levels, but for this sake, I would say it's a pretty good option. And so on. So in this example, this has 4 net carbs because it's the total carbs minus the dietary fiber minus the sugar alcohol because these are not absorbed into your blood system. So you start off with 9 grams minus 5, 4 net carbs. So remember I said that the limit is 50 grams total or 20 to 30 net carbs. So that's how you differentiate that. Yes, question.
Well, I noticed this is 80 calories and more than half of those calories are fat.
Perfect.
So you've been talking about, you know, a couple of cases here, but you didn't mention what their cholesterol level was.
We'll go into that. Actually, that's a good, I don't have it here, but I'm glad you asked that as well. So the and strangely enough, most people's cholesterol will go down on this diet. Super counterintuitive. So here you are eating more eggs, perhaps more bacon, more cheese, and the cholesterol is going down. It sounds absolutely crazy. Okay, but sometimes it will go up initially. All right, sometimes the cholesterol will go up initially. Like if you check it, like, you know, I've been into this diet for 6 weeks, let's check it. It can go up, but if you checked it again in 3 months, 4 months, it's actually lower than when it started. Okay, and the good cholesterol goes up as well on this diet as well. Triglycerides will go down as well. I had one lady, her triglycerides, normal is 150 or less. Had a lady with fatty liver, seen on an ultrasound. She had elevated liver enzymes. She started this diet. Her triglycerides went from 815 down to 149, normal, in 2 months. Her total cholesterol was 330. Now, I did put her on some Lipitor, but I only put her on 10 milligrams, the very low dose, because that number made me real nervous. This was before the keto diet, by the way. Before she started the keto diet, her cholesterol was 315 or 330, somewhere up there, really high. So I put her on a very low dose of Lipitor, 10 milligrams. And we checked 2 months later. Not only did her liver enzymes significantly improve, her triglycerides went to 149, her cholesterol was down to 160. Right. And again, Lipitor, 10 milligrams, would not have brought it down that much. This was mostly, and Lipitor does not affect triglycerides at all either. That's what, you know, there's other medicines for that. So Lipitor only works on the cholesterol and bad cholesterol, not the triglycerides. So her cholesterol dropped 150 points. Maybe half of that was the Lipitor, the other half was the diet. But that's what I've been seeing time and time again. So the whole fat cholesterol hypothesis is being challenged, to be quite honest, right? Because the fact is, half the people who have heart attacks have normal cholesterol. Half the people who have heart attacks have normal cholesterol. And most people with high cholesterol never have a heart attack. So it's a risk factor, I would suggest, but it's not causative. It's a risk factor. So I'm not saying don't stop your medicines. And we know people who have diabetes, they should be on a statin medication. There's evidence that is beneficial. So by no means am I suggesting anyone stop that medicine. But we've seen people levels of cholesterol go down so low that we bring down the cholesterol medicine dose as well. Because low cholesterol, too low of cholesterol is also an issue. That's also not good.
Well, you know, my concern is I had open heart surgery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, and I've kept my cholesterol very, very low. It's like 149.
Mm-hmm.
When I had the surgery, it was 206.
Right.
So
yeah. Yeah. And
very cautious about eating animal fat.
No, absolutely. Yeah, because that's kind of, you know, I'm going to go over some of the studies that I would actually suggest that. And so what they're actually suggesting is that it's not so much saturated fats necessarily that are causing the problem. It's the saturated fats plus their carbohydrates. So the studies will actually show that. So if you keep the amount of saturated fats constant in a person's diet, but then this group eats more carbohydrates than that other group, the one that eats the most carbohydrates actually will end up with higher cholesterol and higher risk.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Back to the last slide
for just
a second.
I
want us to eat 20 to 30 carbs. Thank you.
Yeah. It's not, some people will compare this to an Atkins diet. It's not really the Atkins diet, which kind of had a reputation of being a high protein diet, right? This diet can be done safely. Not just in my experience, by my experience, it could be done safely. And those with diabetes, high blood pressure, those who want to lose extra weight, those on insulin should be cautious, because your blood sugar might go down. That's a side effect of this diet. Your blood sugar will go down, and you'll need less insulin or no insulin. So again, you have to be very cautious about that. And again, this isn't something that I came up with. Dr. Jason Fung, again, will show the book. A nephrologist out of Toronto has been doing this for 6-7 years, and he's had hundreds of people get off their insulin, hundreds of people with heart disease and diabetes improve their metabolic profile and stuff. So this is not a new idea that started with me. So I'm kind of looking at the research out there of those who've written books on this before me. It's not for those who are pregnant, breastfeeding, underweight, or those who have a history of an eating disorder, too. So people who are, you know, history of anorexia and so on, probably not a good idea. The origins of the keto diet actually go back over 100 years, or almost 100 years, and it was first used in the treatment of drug-resistant seizures. So it was observed back in the 1920s that children with seizure disorder who did not respond to the drugs of the time, which were limited, when they would go on a ketogenic diet, would actually have less seizures. It is still used today for those with medication-resistant seizures with notable success. So for some people, it can eliminate it completely. For other people, you know, instead of having 10 seizures a day, they might only have 2 seizures a day, which can be, you know, still life-changing. Again, benefits of a ketogenic diet, seizure control, weight loss, improved diabetes, reverse diabetes, reversing metabolic syndrome, reversing polycystic ovary syndrome, which is a leading cause of infertility, reverses fatty liver, can help a lot of people with heartburn as well. Again, and the other disclaimer too, you know, all you guys are under the care of a physician. Some of you might be our group, some may not, that's fine. Consult with your doctor about this. They might not have heard anything about it, so you may want to share some information about them. Again, I'm going to show you some of the books that I would recommend. I've read personally like 5 or 6 books just in the last 10 months on the ketogenic diet. But again, and if the doctor says, no, there's no evidence of that, no, that's crazy, no, it's not coming from a place of research, with all due respect. They just probably, we weren't taught about it in medical school, you know, and they just haven't researched it to a big degree and stuff. So, but once they actually research the studies, research the evidence, and dig into it, I think, you know, they would find it hard to say there's no evidence for it, or no, this is harmful and stuff. So I think, you know, so the best thing to do is just say, hey, doc, I got this book I've been looking at. This nephrologist out of Toronto has had a lot of success. Are you familiar with it? It has some good stuff. So that's a kind of a good way of saying, hey, how come you don't know about this or anything like that, right? So, you know, because let's be honest. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that we have to filter through. So patients are bringing us books left and right every day. How about this supplement? How about this? How about that diet? How about, you know, and there's so much to stay on top of that, you know, there's no way that we can possibly stay on top of everything and stuff. So, but anyway, what is a ketone? So our body has 2 sources of energy. Number 1, sugar. Number 2, ketones. Okay. In the absence of sugar, our body will start to burn fat, which gets converted into ketones. So when sugar is absent, the body burns fat for energy. Fatty acids are converted into ketones by the liver. Ketones are like high octane fuel for the body. Okay, so sugar is low octane fuel, ketones are high octane fuel, is a way to look at that. And there is, and these are the main ones, it's called acetoacetate, beta hydroxybutyric acid, and acetone. Now this should be differentiated, by the way. Have any of you heard of ketoacidosis?
Yeah.
Right. Sounds scary, right? And you're like, that's a scary thing that can happen to diabetics. They go into ketoacidosis, and here's this crazy doctor telling me to go on a keto diet. I mean, where did this guy go to school? I mean, this is ridiculous. So those are 2 different things. So ketoacidosis is a thing that happens when, generally, it's a way a type 1 diabetic will present because their body's not making insulin, right? Their blood sugar will go really high, 400, 500, 600. I've seen it 1,100. Okay, they have no insulin, their blood sugar is 1,100, they become dehydrated, and they basically have a buildup of acid, of ketones in their body. Their ketone levels will go 18, 20, 22, and so on. Okay, but again, high sugar, no insulin, their blood becomes very acidotic. Okay, in the sense of a keto diet, you have plenty of insulin, and you have your blood sugar actually goes down, okay, and your ketone level goes to about 2 to 4 in the body. So again, they're kind of 2 different things and stuff, but that's why I think the keto diet has scared a lot of doctors, because I thought that same way, like, oh man, this definitely can't be good for diabetics, because they might go into acidosis, because that's what we learned. But then all of a sudden, I have patients reversing their diabetes, getting off their insulin. I'm like, wow, this is great. I've never even seen this before up until recently. So that actually sounds pretty good. So again, I started researching that more. So anyway, so they are kind of two different things on different ends of the spectrum. And so going on a keto diet will not put you into ketoacidosis. Okay, again, benefits of a keto diet, mental clarity. So there's actually studies where with patients with Alzheimer's disease and dementia, where they put them on a low-carb ketogenic diet, and when they do memory tests before and memory tests after going on this, they actually see improvement in the memory test, improvement in clarity. A doctor out of UCLA called named Dr. Dale Bredesen wrote a book called Reversing Alzheimer's Disease, when they've been able to actually help people's cognitive function, doing about 20 different things, which is a whole other talk. But one of those is a low-carb diet. So they realize a low-carb diet is good for the brain, good for memory. May also help with Parkinson's disease, because again, remember, ketones are a high-octane fuel for the body. I had a patient yesterday who has a mitochondrial disorder. He's young, in his 50s, and he has a lot of tremors and shakes and walks very unsteady in a taxic gait. His wife is on a keto diet. She feeds him a keto diet. And yesterday she was telling me, well, his doctor says he shouldn't go on the keto diet, is what his specialist told her. However, since I've put him on it, he has less tremors, he's walking better, and he's doing better. And she asked me, what should I do? And I'm like, well, I mean, gosh, if he's doing better and he's feeling better and his blood tests are looking good, I think it's okay. And based on the stuff that I've read, the stuff that she's read, and we know that ketones are a preferred source of energy for the mitochondria, which are the energy sources of our body and stuff. So she's going to go ahead and continue to do it because he's doing better. He feels better. And that's really what it's all about. May help. Again, we talked about the cancer cells, may make cancer cells more responsive to chemotherapy. Improve symptoms in those with autism, may help fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome, multiple sclerosis, and so on. And again, these are all things that I've researched, things that I've seen in the books that I've read. So I'm not just kind of coming up with this from my own. So this was back in 2005, actually. Effect of a low-carbohydrate diet on appetite, blood glucose levels, and insulin resistance in obese patients with type 2 diabetes. In a small group of obese patients with type 2 diabetes, a low-carb diet, and this is a short study, a low-carb diet followed for 2 weeks resulted in spontaneous reduction in energy intake. This is a fancy way of saying they ate less food. Resulted in spontaneous reduction in energy intake. They ate less food to an appropriate level to their height and weight. So in other words, they didn't overeat. That was completely accounted for by the reduced caloric intake. They had improvement in their 24-hour blood glucose levels. They had improved insulin sensitivity, meaning their insulin was more efficient. And hemoglobin A1C also improved, and a decreased plasma triglyceride and decreased cholesterol levels. Again, long-term effects of this diet remain uncertain. And when they do these studies, they have to be very, they can't really give their opinion. They just have to be very matter of factly. But I would say long-term effects remain uncertain. Okay, so long-term effects of reducing your blood sugar, lowering your triglycerides, lowering your cholesterol. Gee, we wonder what the long-term effect of that is. Well, I would suggest that it's probably a good long-term effect. Foods on a keto diet, again, what can you eat is a big question. Non-starchy vegetables, broccoli, cabbage, cucumber, kale, arugula, garlic, jalapeno, spinach. Low sugar fruits, avocados, blueberries, strawberries, raspberries, cherries, maybe. I think cherries are okay. Avocados are kind of a mainstay for a lot of people who do this diet because, again, it's a high-fat diet. Avocados are good and high in fat, right? But most of us remember not too long ago, they said don't eat that many avocados because they're high in saturated fat. We don't hear that anymore because even though it's saturated fat, we realize that actually they have a lot of health benefits and stuff. So that's kind of evidence of that saturated fat theory kind of crumbling, because now we say eat all the avocados you want. We don't have to limit it.
What if you're allergic to avocados? Then what's your substitute? Seriously.
Question. Yeah, you just do the other fruits at that point, and nuts and seeds and coconut oil and so on.
What about coconut oil? I've heard bad things about that.
Because it's a saturated fat. That's why people are lumping that with all the other saturated fats. But
is it bad?
I don't think it's bad. And from the stuff that I've read, it's not bad.
I have it every day. I don't know if it's bad. Yeah, it's fine to do.
Coconut oil, in my opinion, is fine to do. They've lumped it with all the other saturated fats. But again, we're going through a change right now when we're rethinking the whole idea of saturated fat, right? Forever, we said butter was bad. It's a saturated fat. So they came up with what? To replace margarine, right? Which was three times more, you know, which is, you know, increases risk. I mean, they banned margarine now. I mean, it's trans fats. It's a trans fat. It's banned. I mean, it's going to be taken out of the food by, I think it's by 2020. It's going to be completely out of food. You know, it's banned in New York. I mean, margarine increases risk for heart attacks and strokes. It does. Yeah.
So apples, oranges, bananas?
Right. So apples, oranges, and bananas on a keto diet are not, because they have a high sugar content. So again, so if you, now, so I was thinking about this too. Our ancestors never ate apples all year around. Our ancestors never ate bananas all year around. They never ate any fruit all year around because no fruit in a local community is in season all year around. The only reason we're eating fruit all year around is because we import it. Right, it's always in season somewhere, so we're able to import it and stuff. But our bodies are on biological clocks, right? It's just like, you know, we go to sleep when it's dark, and you know, our hormone levels, and we wake up when it's light, and we know, you know, sleep shift disorder. People who work nights and sleep during the day, that's not necessarily good for one's health long term. But again, so we have to. I think the premise here is trying to get back to as much of a natural setting as possible, to try to do as much as of a natural setting as possible of what our body kind of has adapted and is expected to be doing. And this is really this last 100 years is really the only generation probably where we're eating three meals a day, where we don't have to burn any calories to do so, where we can go point A to point B and barely, you know, expend any energy, where, you know, we can be up all night because of artificial light. And so on, because, you know, 200 years ago, I don't think people had insomnia. I don't think, you know, the sun, the moon was out, the wolves were howling, the stars were out, and they probably weren't laying there thinking all night, you know.
The question is, never eat an apple?
No, I'm not saying never. No, of course you can do it. You know, like for myself, I've gotten to my weight goal. So if I want to eat an apple, I'll eat an apple. But if I'm going back to eating smoothies every day and a ton of sugar, I'll probably be back in the same situation that I was, you know.
So sparingly.
Yeah, so, but I realized that, you know, there's a lot of sugar in that as well. I mean, so again, this is really, if you want to really kind of get that weight down, and you'll know too, you'll sit there and say, well, I ate an apple last night and my sugar was perhaps higher that next day or shortly thereafter. So it kind of ends up, you know, but if you think about it, apples really are only in season a couple months a year.
I love apples.
Yeah, I like them too. No, that's one of the things that I miss. I'll be honest.
Half of one.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can do all of that and stuff. So, I mean, you know, but again, I would say you kind of have to experiment on yourself in a way and see how you react to certain things. Meat, seafood, you know, poultry, meat, you know, all that is, you know, acceptable on this. Again, completely counter to what everyone's been telling you, right? But, you know, and when it comes to a lot of these meats too, I think, you know, if affordable, more of a grass-fed, hormone-free option is really better. So that, you know, so maybe eating less meat, but choosing a better quality. So at the end of the month, it's cost neutral. You're not necessarily doubling your budget, but you're having a healthier type of meat. Yes, question.
Okay, we're talking about meats and stuff, but one of the things we have in today's society is all this it's foods that basically you just put in the microwave.
Right.
How does that fit into this? I mean, it can be beef, it can be chicken, it can be pork.
Well, yeah, so that's why, again, I was, you know, I mean, obviously, the more that we can make our own food, the better, grass-fed, hormone-free, but it's not so much always the meat that's in those microwave, it's all the other stuff that's added on there as well. You know, there may be extra sodium, extra sugar, perhaps in a sauce, you know, if it's a meat with sauce and so on. So you just have to pay attention to the labels and so on. But saturated fats, right? Again, believe it, this is being called into question, the dangers of it. And so here is a study. This is British Medical Journal, 2015. Intake of saturated and trans unsaturated fatty acids and risk of all-cause mortality, cardiovascular disease. Okay, conclusion. Saturated fats are not associated with all-cause mortality, cardiovascular disease, coronary heart disease, ischemic stroke, or type 2 diabetes. Okay, saturated fats. Now, how many people are in this study? Let's take a look here. they looked at 17 different, actually this was a 3 to 12 studies here were pooled, 5 to 17 comparisons with 90, so they looked at between 90,500 to 339,000 people. All right, that's almost like studying everybody in Southwest Riverside. Okay. Saturated fat was not associated with all-cause mortality. Saturated fats are not associated with all-cause mortality. Cardiovascular disease, coronary heart disease, stroke, diabetes. The evidence is heterogeneous, kind of, it's varied. Okay, so it does say it has some limitations. Trans fats, margin, are associated with all-cause mortality. Trans fats are associated with heart disease and, you know, and heart disease death, probably because of the higher levels of the intake of industrial trans fatty acids. Dietary guidelines must carefully consider the health effects of recommendations for alternative nutrients to replace trans fats and saturated fats. But anyway, so again, this is out of British Medical Journal. Milk alternatives, you know, heavy cream, I actually use that frequently as a creamer for coffee, heavy whipping cream. Fine fat, cheese, plain Greek yogurt, almond milk, coconut milk. A lot of times regular cow milk might have a little too many carbs. So. Fats, so these are the good fats we're talking about, right? We're not asking you to take a spoonful of lard. That's not what we're recommending. All right. Nuts, seeds, almonds, Brazil nuts, cashews, pecans, pistachios, pumpkin seeds, almond butter, peanut butter, cashew butter, avocado oil, coconut oil, butter, flaxseed oil, grapeseed oil, hemp seed oil, chia seeds. You know, so these are ways of getting good fats into your system. These are some snacks that are out there too that, you know, that I found personally made it easier to get through this, because sometimes you're just craving a chocolate chip cookie or a chocolate peanut butter bar, and if it's the difference between forget this, I'm done with this keto diet, I'm going to eat a Snicker bar, or I'll eat this Atkins bar, sometimes it's just enough to get you through those difficult periods. Or these chocolate chip cookies, or they have what are called fat bombs as well, which are usually made with coconut oil, and you can add peanut butter to it and so on.
Fat bombs.
Again, a reminder how to read labels. So again, if you look here, we have 6 total carbohydrates, right? We have a 50 total carb limit. 3 of those are sugar, 2 of them are fiber, so it's 6 minus 2, so this is 4 net carbs. Okay. So just to kind of summarize this, so intermittent fasting is kind of the one thing that you can do, and if you said, you know what, I don't like this keto diet, that's not for me, that's fine. But the intermittent fasting could also be very, very beneficial. But I think whether you're doing a keto diet, a paleo diet, or just no diet whatsoever, those with diabetes need to be very cautious of carbohydrate intake, so grains and pastas and rice, noodles and all that stuff, because they break down into sugar and can raise your blood sugar level. So again, and then also the fruits as well. They're good, they're healthy, but again, we never ate them all year around, and they can raise our blood sugar. So if the goal is to go on, you know, to use less medicine, if the goal is to lose weight, if the goal is to reduce your insulin levels or make your insulin more efficient, then we have to just pay more attention and try to get our overall sugar consumption down from that high level that I showed in that slide early on. We're up to 120 grams per day. We got to even get that down to 80 grams per day or less to help. And then the part two is that ketogenic diet. Let me give you another case. This is a guy I just got a message from the other day. This patient of mine, 50-year-old, he's been a patient of mine for about 10 years. He has diabetes. His wife has diabetes. His sister-in-law has diabetes. Right? They're all my patients. They all have diabetes. All pretty poorly controlled. John's A1C was 9.3, despite using 130 units of insulin a day. This guy's on one of the highest levels of insulin that I have patients on, of long-acting insulin, plus 15 units of rapid-acting, right? 6 feet tall, 237 pounds. His triglycerides were 620, which when I saw those, I said, good job, because he's normally 1,100, 1,500, right? And normal is less than 150. I saw him on February 6th, and we discussed the keto diet, intermittent fasting. I, again, gave him this handout. 2 weeks later, he sent me a message through the portal, and this was his message. Keto diet update. I've lost 8 pounds. This was 2 weeks later. I've lost 8 pounds. I haven't taken insulin over a week. So So he stopped insulin within 7 days.
Without talking to you?
Well, we talked about how his blood sugar was going to go down. He might need to back off. I didn't think he'd be able to back off that much. But he did. So I haven't taken any insulin over a week. At times, my blood sugar is too low to even take my pills.
Wow.
Because he's not eating sugar. Now, imagine this. Imagine a patient came to me and they said, Dr. Madrid, I drink 12 beers a day. I'm concerned. Right? I'm concerned if I get pulled over and they check my blood, I'm going to get a DUI. My blood alcohol level's high. And around the afternoon, I'm a little bit of a brain fog, right, from those 12 beers a day. And me being a brilliant doctor, I say, I got a solution to you, for you. I'm going to give you a medicine. It's going to lower your blood alcohol level. Right, so if you get pulled over, it's going to be low. You're going to be fine. Don't worry. Blood alcohol level will be normal. We're going to try to get it to normal. And you're a little confused towards the end of the day, so I'm going to give you a medication, maybe an amphetamine, to help your brain fog so you can think clearly. And you guys would say, you better find a new doctor. That's the worst advice I've ever given. That's horrible advice to someone who drinks 12 beers a day, because the answer, obviously, is to not do what?
Drink beer.
Okay? So patients have been coming to us for 30 years. Doctor, my blood sugar is high. Oh, that's okay. I'm going to give you a medicine, lower your blood sugar. Oh, I got neuropathy. I'm going to give you another medicine to help with those side of it. But how many doctors said, cut back on their sugar, cut back on their carbs? Almost never. Right? But when you do, look what happens. The levels go down. We're undergoing a paradigm shift in medicine. Okay, and again, I've mentioned Dr. Jason Fung several times because he's inspired me, and I think a lot of other doctors, and he's inspired. We're undergoing a paradigm shift because, in my opinion, and again, it might sound crazy now, and 5 years from now, you're going to be like, man, Dr. Madrid was saying that 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. We're undergoing a paradigm shift where we're treating diabetes wrong, and the problem is too much sugar. And we're just giving medicines to lower the sugar. We're not fixing the problem.
Diabetes.
Right, and we saw how our sugar levels are way up high. We got to get those sugar intake levels down low. Okay, so what we're trying to do in medicine, it's almost like we're saying, hey, go ahead and eat whatever you want, you know, do whatever you want. And, you know, I mean, if someone comes to me and they say, hey, doc, I eat a chili cheese dog every day and I get heartburn, what's the solution?
Don't eat.
All right. Now, if you go to medical school, the solution will be, here's some Protonix. Here's some omeprazole. That's how doctors look at it. Oh, I'll give you an acid reducer medicine. I'll give you an acid reducer medicine. Keep eating your chili cheese dog every day. Hey, great, doc, I have no more symptoms. Right? I mean, so again, we have to really kind of get to the cause of the problem. So anyway, so 2 weeks later, this is what he sends me. Right. Yesterday, hey doc, just wanted to update you on my keto journey. It's actually 6 weeks here, not anyway. 6 weeks in tomorrow, and I've just dropped to 20 pounds. Started at 237, now I'm at 217. So I saw him on February 6th. As far as my meds go, I quickly found out that the 1,000 milligram metformin pill is no longer needed. Now he's off the insulin now. I only take it when my blood sugar readings are above 175. I would suggest he stay on it, but which is hardly ever the case anymore. My readings in the morning have been averaging 115 to 130, usually around 125. At night, I will check when I get home around 10. He works late. It's usually 65 to 70. I'm just blown away by all this, and it's been relatively easy giving up carbs and sugars. I'm going to be to my target weight of 200 and 2 or 205 before my next visit with you on May 7th. All right. And so, again, this is so the question is, what's the long term effects of, you know, of a keto diet? Well, I don't know. No insulin, losing weight, feeling better. Right. And of course, we know diabetes is a risk factor for kidney disease, amputations, strokes and all that. So I think the benefits are definitely in the risk reduction definitely has a lot of advantages and so on. Any questions at all? Yeah.
I buy this stuff at Trader Joe's. It's between butter and margarine, and it tastes like real butter, only it's made from cashews.
As long as there's no trans fats in there, it sounds like it was like a cashew butter, I guess, of some sort.
It's not cashew butter.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, just make sure there's no trans fats in it, but
it's
sure.
It's sold where they sell butter and margarine.
I'm sure, yeah.
And
I'm sure
it's vegan.
Okay, yeah.
Whatever that means.
Yeah, it's plant-based, so it should be fine. Just make sure there's no trans fats. Yes?
I noticed onions aren't on here.
They're fine. They're fine. I probably just didn't put them on there. Yeah, but onions are acceptable.
Okay.
their onions are acceptable. Yes, question.
How long does it take you to get over the craving for the carbs and the sugar?
Good question. For most people, 3 to 5 days. Because here's what happens. So we keep a 3-day supply of sugar storage in our liver. We call it glycogen. Okay, so if I'm eating sugar, my body's going to use that for energy. If I stop eating sugar, my body's now going to use the 3-day supply that's in my liver called glycogen. And that's as I start burning through the glycogen for energy, because the glycogen turns into sugar, my body's going to start to crave. Because after the glycogen's gone, the body has to dip into the savings account, the fat. The body doesn't want to dip into the savings account. So it's going to send messages, hey, that bread's looking really good. Hey, those sweets are looking really good. So the way I started looking at it is when you're craving bread, pasta, sugars, and sweets, that's great. That's a good sign. That means your body's on the verge of burning fat. And your body doesn't want to burn fat. So it sends you messages to eat sugar. Because you eat more sugar, it's going to replenish your sugar stores and make more fat. Yep. So, yes, question.
You don't want to hear this. When I started reducing all the cravings and stuff, I had an extra cup of coffee in the afternoon because I use a non-dairy creamer. And that kind of filled up the belly.
Yes. Coffee, I will admit, I probably drink more coffee now than I did 9 months ago. Because you're right, you do sometimes want something, and you could do coffee if you wanted to add like a heavy whipped cream, because fat actually satisfies it. Yeah, it kind of helps reduce craving. So eating fat actually makes you feel full more than eating carbs, right? You know, if you eat carbs, you're going to crave more carbs. I mean, think about a handful of nuts. You can eat a handful of nuts and feel okay for a while. Most people can. And you'll feel okay for a while. But when you're eating cookies and sugary foods or chips, I mean, you can just keep going. You never feel full. Yeah. Right? You can eat 1,200 calories of chips or cookies and still not feel full. Or 200 calories of fruit, or avocado or something, and you'll feel full, at least for that while and stuff. So this is a book that I've been talking about, Obesity Code. The cookbook that I'm, or the recipe book that I'm passing around is Ketotarian by Dr. Will Cole. You can find recipes at ketoconnect.net. Also, if anyone's on Instagram, anyone on Instagram?
Yeah. There's
great
recipes on
Instagram. A lot of recipes on Instagram.
What about things like diet soda pops and stuff like that?
So there's two answers to that. Is it allowed on a keto diet? Yes. Do I recommend it? Not really. I mean, if it's a deal breaker, like if I can't eat that Diet Coke, I forget this whole thing, then yeah, do it. But Diet Coke, though, has its other side effects as well, right? Or these diet sodas, because it's aspartame. So some studies have suggested increased risk for heart disease, increased risk for kidney disease, they can trigger migraines in people. They stop a person from feeling full as well. So they've done studies when people are eating food with like regular Coke, with regular sugar Coke versus Diet Coke, the ones who drink the Diet Coke will actually eat more calories during that meal. So it kind of offsets that and stuff. So unsweetened tea, stevia, now there's a soda called Zevia, it's sweetened with stevia. And so I'll do that. I don't drink that much soda, but when I do want a soda, I'll use something called Zevia. And you're going to pay $6 for a 6-pack, so obviously I'm not going to be drinking them, 2 or 3 a day. I'll have them once in a great while. But again, that kind of helps to at least settle that craving that I get once in a while without,
How about alcohol?
Alcohol, good question, right? Yes, it's allowed. So beer tends to be high in carbs. Now, again, if you don't drink, we're not encouraging you to start, right? And beer tends to be high in carbs, so there's low-carb beers, for example. Hard liquor tends to have no carbs, right? I mean, for example, whiskey has no carbs, but honey whiskey and fire whiskey.
Fireball
has a lot of carbs, so regular whiskey does not. So again,
wine? Dry wine on here.
Yeah, dry wine is about 4 carbs per serving.
Okay.
Per serving, about 4 carbs, so it's allowed, huh? A little bit, yeah, but about 4 grams. So if you get 30 net carbs a day and you have 4 on the wine, you can make up for that. Yes?
Coke makes a diet cola sweetened with Splenda.
That would be okay, yeah. For some people, Splenda can cause gastrointestinal issues. On a keto diet, it would be okay. But for some people, it can cause diarrhea. I've seen that before.
Yeah. Doctor, what about salt and pepper?
Salt and pepper? Mm-hmm. Salt and pepper is fine. Yeah. Yeah.
Eggs.
Eggs are fine.
With the yolk?
With the yolk. That's fine. No, you're going to see studies going back and forth, all that. But the egg yolk, right, it's high in cholesterol. So, again, I think we have to realize that.
So get rid of it if you're high.
Here's the thing. Carbohydrates and sugar will raise your cholesterol more than eating cholesterol will. Sugar and carbs will raise your cholesterol more than eating cholesterol will.
Okay.
They always go back and forth on the egg thing, right? You know, but the yolk also has B vitamins, it has choline, and it has things that are important for brain health as well. You know, so I don't recommend people necessarily avoid eggs. I wouldn't necessarily go out of my way to eat 5 eggs a day, but if you want to have 1 or 2 eggs a day, that's not a big deal, I don't think. Yeah. But I wouldn't necessarily say, oh, I'm going to keto down, I'm just going to eat an egg-only diet, I'm going to eat 12 hard-boiled eggs every day for the next month, I mean, or something. I think it still comes down to moderation, anything in moderation and stuff. And this is a carb-restricted diet. You guys might say, hey, that's tough. But again, this is what our ancestors did. I mean, this isn't that crazy. This is what people did back in the days and stuff, right? I mean, relatively, you know, grain is, again, relatively a more recent thing in human history, but... our ancestors had grass-fed, hormone-free beef. They had free-range chickens. They ate free-range eggs that were high in omega-3s. They walked 3 to 5 miles a day. They went to sleep when the sun went down. They woke up when the sun came up. Right? I mean, so again, trying to get back to, you know, they didn't eat high fructose corn syrup because it didn't exist back then. You know, our cows aren't supposed to eat cornmeal. Cows in nature don't eat corn. Cornmeal, right? But it's a cheap energy source, so we use that and we feed them all this corn, you know, meal and stuff like that. And so again, I think that it really comes down to trying to get back to more of a more natural habitat or a more natural environment for our body. And then, yeah, that was me back in June, and now I'm actually at 197, so I'm actually way less than I do there. And it is relatively easier, right? And I feel a lot better. Thank you. All right. Any more questions?
I have one quick question.
Yes.
On one slide, you had that reduced the symptoms of autism. Is that just because of the sugar that carbs create?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and the brain's using ketones as energy and stuff. So, there's a good. There's studies out there, and there's a documentary on Netflix called The Magic Pill, which is pretty good. So they had one and. Yeah, they had one anecdotal study or one individual on there who went and really just kind of cleaned up the diet quite a bit and stuff. And the kid was talking a lot more and doing, and basically because the brain was using a different energy source. So instead of using glucose for energy, it was using ketones for energy and stuff.
That's great. So.
All right. Any more questions?
Yeah,
a lot. Yes.
Is there a way to cut carbs down to the below 50 a day without going to the high fat portion?
So the question is, can you cut the carbs down to less than 50 a day without going to the high fat, which then would mean you're eating more protein. So because you have three macronutrients, we have fat, carbs, and protein. So those are kind of only our three choices in that sense. So if we're lowering the carbs and lowering the fat, then that leaves with protein. So that becomes a high protein diet, which can be okay initially sometimes. But what happens over time, too much protein, your body will convert that protein into sugar. And we call it gluconeogenesis. So one of the things that happens, people will come to me on this diet and they'll say, hey, I lost 20 pounds, but I plateaued for the last couple of months. And then I'll check and see what they're doing. And a lot of times they have too low of fat. So it might help initially to lose weight, but I think, you know, you'll stall or you may go back. Because that protein is now going to be converted back into sugar, and then you're going to have an insulin release, and the insulin causes weight gain. So, but I think start focusing on the healthy fats. Again, we've been so ingrained that fats are bad, and I understand that, because believe me, it takes a lot for me to come up here and say that it's okay to eat fat, because that's kind of heretical in, amongst the industry or amongst the profession and stuff. But that's why I put those studies up there to say, hey, this wasn't just my idea. This was what, you know, British Medical Journal was saying. So now we can wait and for 20 more years until all the doctors start agreeing on that and all the journals start publishing that, or, you know, we can, you know, I tend to be more of a trailblazer. When I see some good studies, I jump on it. I'm not waiting for the American Heart Association, the American Dietetic Association to come out and make these recommendations. Because, again, that will take 20 years for that to happen.
The cheese and the nuts and things are the high fat, good fats.
Avocados and yeah.
Cheese is good.
Cheese is allowed on this diet, I think. Within moderation, yeah, it's fine.
Well, I just have a lot of salt.
If you can tolerate it.
Reading off of this, yeah. Cheeses are almost all highlighted.
Yeah. I highlighted the stuff that's high in fat. The bold stuff is high in fat.
What is a good
sauteing with coconut oil, I think, is a good idea. Using, you know, making Brussels sprouts with coconut oil is a good way to get fat as well. So research it, look on it. You know, there's a lot of videos on YouTube as well that you can find. And I think, you know, again, it's a journey as well. So thank you.